You are listening to the Hippie Haven podcast, where we have real life conversations about all things hippie, from veganism to zero waste to manifesting to minimalism and everything in between. I'm your host, Callie. I'm a zero waste activist and consultant traveling the United States in a van with a mission of encouraging people to live an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. With this podcast, I want to show you how easy it can be to take small steps that make a big difference in saving our planet. Let's get started. This episode of the Hippie Haven podcast is brought to you by Bestowed Essentials, my own line of ethical and eco-friendly self-care products. They're all natural, certified vegan and cruelty-free, in zero-waste packaging, handmade by me in my van with solar power. Visit bestowedessentials.com and use the code HIPPIEHAVEN10 to save 10% off your first order. Thank you so much for supporting my work. Today I'm chatting with Celia Risto, the blogger behind Litterless.com. Our conversation lasts over an hour and a half, so we're cutting it into two parts. In this first episode, we talk about Celia's journey into zero waste, how she was one of the first zero waste bloggers on the scene to discuss imperfect zero waste, and how she co-founded Zero Waste Chicago, which is an environmental organization that offers resources and education to increase awareness of alternatives to the traditional waste stream. Tell me about yourself and how you got started living a low-waste lifestyle.
So my name is Celia Risto. I live in Madison right now, Madison, Wisconsin. I'm from Indianapolis originally, and I first heard about zero waste when I was in college. I stumbled upon a video of Bea Johnson and her family, you know, just how you do, finding things on the internet. And I think it was 2011, and I remember the video had such a profound impact on me. So at the time, I was leading my college's environmental club, and I brought the video to the club, and we talked about it. And we talked about if this is possible, does everyone have an obligation to try to do it? But at the time, I was living in a dorm. I was eating in the school cafeteria. I just didn't feel like I had a lot of control over the purchasing decisions in my life and in my home and my kitchen. And I think zero waste is so much about harnessing that consumer power that when you have your life sort of set up for you by an institution or by other people, it can feel hard to make those decisions yourself. So I just let the idea marinate for a couple of years. And then I moved to Chicago after I graduated. And that's when I really dove in. And that was a great time to do it because I was setting up my kitchen for the first time, cleaning my house top to bottom myself for the first time, weekly grocery shopping for the first time. And so instead of switching existing habits to be zero waste, I was able to say, like, I'm doing this for the first time. Let's just make it zero waste from the get-go. So that summer I bought a couple produce bags and I set up composting with the pickup service, and it kind of has grown from there.
So what does zero waste mean to you?
That's such a great question. I'm glad you asked, because I don't get a chance to say it often enough that when I say zero waste, I'm really using that word to stand in for what I think of as low waste or zero-ish. When I first started blogging especially, I felt a lot of pressure to get to zero. I felt that no one would take me seriously in my zero waste writing or as an activist if I wasn't making as little trash as possible. And now actually I sort of think the opposite. I think that the reason that people can take me seriously is because I'm honest about the fact that I'm not at zero. So I always talk about how zero looks different for everyone. So for me, zero waste is trying really hard to avoid disposables, but I can't find soba noodles and coconut milk in bulk, and I buy those in packaging, and I recycle the can of coconut milk, and I throw away the plastic bag around the soba noodles, and that's fine. For other people, they might really be trying to get to absolute zero, and more power to them. For a family, it might look like going from a bag of trash a week to a bag of trash every 2 weeks. I think it's less about sort of the output, the zero, and more about the whole mindset of, have you made an effort to compost? Are you trying to remember to bring your water bottle and your reusable fork? And we're not always going to remember to do all of these things, but it's sort of like just a term that to me has come to mean, like, basically just like making the effort.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've seen the term low impact lifestyle picking up lately. And I think that might be a little bit better of a fit, but of course it's not as catchy as zero waste when you're, you know, trying to introduce it to new people.
I like low waste a lot, but that word zero, so it's caught. And I think it's kind of there to stay.
Why is it important that we reduce what we're sending to the landfill? Why is that a big deal?
A thing that I like about the zero waste movement is that you could actually answer that question from a ton of different angles. For some people, they're really motivated by seeing plastic pollution on beaches where they live. For environmental justice and environmental racism advocates, it's about the fact that landfills are often situated in or near lower income neighborhoods, so it disproportionately affects the health of those residents. Those are both important to me, but really my motivator is that it's just a great way to act on climate. So when a material goes to the landfill, landfills are, of course, anaerobic. They don't have oxygen, and so things decompose in ways that are really unpredictable, unnatural, and they produce a lot more methane. And methane is 23 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, which is, of course, bad enough. So it's really important to keep stuff out of those sort of like toxic landfills that just belch bad stuff into our air. So that's why I think landfills matter, or keeping things out of landfills matters. The other thing I like about zero waste is that it sort of addresses the whole cycle beyond the landfill, right? So from a climate change perspective, for example, like keeping things out of the landfill is really important, but also keeping things out of the production stream is really important. So about 10% of the oil consumption used worldwide is for making and shipping disposable plastics, which is a crazy number. And it's like, well, what if we just didn't use those plastic forks and brought our own? Just how would that number be different? How would our oil consumption, climate change, how would all of these things be different? So I like that it addresses it both at the death of a product and at the birth, sort of.
Absolutely. It's not an easy thing to answer because it encompasses so many different aspects, like you said, of environmental justice, environmental racism, ocean pollution, air pollution, all these different things.
Yeah. What do you think of as your motivator?
I'd say it's a kind of twofold for me. First and foremost, just wanting to do anything that I can to protect the planet, especially right now in the United States, when it feels like even our own government doesn't care about doing what's right for the planet. Our large corporations are doing things that are extremely harmful. And then for me as well, I want to save money. I'm a very frugal person. And first and foremost, like, not buying as much obviously saves you a lot of money. And second, you know, they say about 10 to 15% of your retail price is for the packaging alone. And so if you're able to buy things unpackaged, you know, not only are you doing a great thing for the planet, but you're saving that bit of money yourself for not paying for that.
To your first point about kind of wanting to do anything you can, that touches on another thing I think is really great about the zero waste movement, which is that there are a lot more points to entry and the barriers to entry are a lot lower. So, you know, you want to live as an environmentalist beyond just signing petitions, but, you know, I live in an apartment, I can't get solar panels, I don't have a car, so I can't, you know, invest in electric or renewable hybrids. But I can like bring my water bottle. I can bring a metal fork. I think so many of these environmental changes we hear about are really big and they're costly and they require you to have a certain means and a certain, you know, amount of control over your house or your housing. But zero waste, it's like, you know, if all you're going to do is bring a cloth napkin out with you to avoid paper napkins, like you're participating and that's amazing.
Absolutely. And I want to show that it is possible. You know, unfortunately, it seems like the face of the zero waste movement, you know, the traditional zero waste, like fitting everything in a mason jar, it's always well off young white women, which I recognize the irony and that both of us are Caucasian. But that face is always somebody that I'm not. You know, I don't have the means. I don't live in New York or live in, you know, any sort of big city and live in a nice house and all of that. But I am fortunate enough to be able to travel the United States. And traveling has been a lifelong dream of mine. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to spend this chapter in my life following my dreams and seeing the world. But I also recognize that there's a carbon footprint to me wanting to travel. And so living in a van, I want to show that, you know, zero waste is compatible with multiple lifestyles. It is compatible if you live in a very small space, including like a 50 square foot vehicle. But then for me too, it's kind of about offsetting the amount of miles that I drive. I know that I, even still, you know, living and traveling in a van, I still drive less per month than the average American does with their commute to and from work. Plus, I don't have the carbon footprint of a home as well. So I do know that in actuality, my carbon footprint is lower than the average American, but I don't necessarily think that's something to be proud of because I think the average American's carbon footprint is ridiculously high. So I just want to, you know, do my part to offset me being able to travel and the negative things that I do contribute to try to at least make things better when I can.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about what we aren't willing to give up for our environmentalism, right? Like I just booked a flight to a friend's wedding, which I'm really looking forward to. Obviously, air travel has a huge environmental toll. And yet, obviously, I'm not willing to miss this friend's wedding or stop seeing family and kind of all the things we need to travel for. But when I look at being zero waste, the things that I have to give up seem so much smaller. Like, I'm not really giving up anything by trying to bring my own fork with me to refuse a plastic one. I'm not really giving up anything by composting or by buying in bulk. So it's sort of about it lets you sort of balance, like, you know, what you want to keep in your life, which might be travel, it might be, I don't know, like boating or just whatever, like, you know, unenvironmental things we all do, with like these small daily things that actually, you know, don't have a detriment to your quality of life.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to show people that you don't have to give up on the things that are important to you, that it's about finding, like you said, that balance of making the eco-friendly, making the ethical choice when the choice is available to you, but recognizing that there are some things that are part of your life, you know, for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that totally applies within zero waste too, right? Like the examples I mentioned have been easy for me to give up, but there are things that were too hard for me to give up that I added back in. And like, I've reached a place where I'm comfortable with that.
So what spurred you to start your website, Litterless?
So I was, so back in 2015, I started it in the summer of 2015. I was reading some blogs and I just didn't have a zero waste blog that I loved. Of course, now there are so many zero waste blogs, so many wonderful people talking in this space, but I felt like at the time, no one was really speaking about zero waste in a way that spoke to me and how I lived my life and what I wanted my home to look like and my style and, you know, my sense of flexibility. It was definitely more of a time about, you know, reaching on the internet, people were talking more about reaching absolute zero, about fitting their trash in a jar and all of these things. I just felt like the blog I wanted to read didn't exist. And I thought, maybe other people might feel that way too. So I tried to make that blog.
I love that. And I love your style too. Your website is just, it's so clean and minimalist. Like just the design of it matches with your style of writing and your photography style. Like you've really created an amazing resource on your website that just fits you perfectly.
That's so kind. Well, the irony is that it took me a couple years to actually be able to write the blog I wanted to read, to just find my photography style and find what I wanted to write about. But I feel like I'm finally there and it feels good.
That is good. Yeah, I just started my own blog a month ago.
Yes, congrats.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, it has been crazy. I thought it was going to be, you know, I thought I'd be lucky to get like 100 people to look at it in the first month. And then...
Yeah, your mom and 99 others.
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, I ended up getting over 5,000 people looked at it in the first month. And I was like, wait, stop. It's not pretty yet. Like, oh no, people are really interested. So let me, oh gosh, let me make this actually like look nice and get some like... some more posts up there. And so, yeah, it's taking off.
Well, that is a good problem to have.
Yes. Yes. Quality problem to have. So tell me about Zero Waste Chicago and how you founded that.
So Zero Waste Chicago is a nonprofit organization. I started in early 2017 with two friends, and our mission is to move Chicago to zero waste. So offering free resources on our website, monthly community meetups, free workshops. So that started after I met these two women. I had started meeting people in Chicago through my blog. I would write a post about Chicago and someone would comment, I live here too, or they'd ask me, email to ask me, you know, where can you buy this in bulk in Chicago? And I just sort of started jotting down their email addresses, thinking it would be great for us all to meet. So in May 2016, I hosted the first meetup in Chicago, and it was a free community space for people to come and just meet each other and chat really casually about what it's like to be zero waste in Chicago. And I hosted a couple more throughout that summer and eventually joined forces with these two women, and we realized like, the meetups were so wonderful and so much information was exchanged in them. Questions about composting, bulk shopping, you know, where to donate things. But that information didn't really live online anywhere. You would have to come to the meetups to find it. And we thought that it should be available to everyone, you know, regardless of whether or not you were able to or wanted to come to these events. So Zero Waste Chicago started as a website with this great resource mapping, so maps of all the stores, lists of all the composters, sort of everything you would need in one place to go zero waste. And then eventually we realized that we wanted to keep these community meetups going, but also have the capability to host free workshops on the topics of zero waste and composting. So it kind of grew and grew from there. An exciting thing we did earlier this year was we brought Bea Johnson to Chicago to speak, which was a great highlight. So, yeah, I ended up leaving Zero Waste Chicago when I moved to Madison a couple months ago, but it's still going strong. So,
what was your proudest accomplishment with Zero Waste Chicago?
That's a good question. I mean, a couple of great media pieces we did. We were on WBEZ, had about a like 25-minute piece on us, the local radio station. We were in Vogue magazine, Vogue online, which was a funny and weird moment. So it's always great to see it taking off and see people taking notice. My favorite things to do, though, were to host workshops for high schoolers. We hosted a couple free zero waste workshops for high schoolers when I was there. And just, man, like if you're ever feeling cynical or down or pessimistic, to see what high school kids are doing to me has always been so inspiring and so rejuvenating. These kids would come with very detailed questions. They'd tell me about their efforts to get composting at their public school cafeterias. They would ask me questions I didn't even know the answer to, just really smart, really thoughtful, really hardworking. And that was just, I always left those feeling like, okay, we got this. Like, people are working on it. We're doing okay.
Yeah, I have high hopes for the next generation. They are, I guess the word is very woke. They're very much aware of the issues that are going on.
Yeah.
And want to do some, not just want to do something, but are already starting to do things to fix it. It's incredible. And speaking of composting in public schools, I was just looking at Zero Waste Guy's blog last night, and he had a guest post a little while back from a custodian, a school custodian, about food waste in school cafeterias and how a lot of these schools have, like, quote unquote food scrap programs, but they're not implemented whatsoever. And still, so they're still throwing away like pounds and pounds of perfectly good food at public schools, you know, every single day. And it was just, it was devastating to read about it from somebody who, you know, literally has their hands dirty in it every single day of like, good grief, you know, how much food waste is being produced in schools across the country, across the world. And how do we do something about it?
Yeah, what I hear from these kids at workshops and also just, you know, about composting in bigger institutions generally is that, well, I think what you're talking about is, you know, food wasted before it even gets to a plate. But, you know, once it's on a plate and it, and they have composting and it should be composted, contamination is huge. So people not knowing or caring what bin they throw it in. And some of the challenges these students faced in Chicago schools, you know, if they got over the insurmountable hurdle of getting their administration to approve the composting and pay for it and all this stuff, then they still had to post, you know, student watchers at every trash can and compost bin at every lunch period to make sure people were throwing things in the right bin. So, yeah, it's such a challenge with these big places.
Yeah. And I'll post in the show notes the link to Zero Waste Guy's guest post about food waste from that school custodian, because it was a really interesting, it was short, but it was a really interesting piece. So now that you've moved to Madison, Wisconsin, what are your plans regarding local zero waste activism there?
So in Madison, I have started a Facebook group where people can meet each other and swap tips, and people have been using it even in the last, you know, the first couple of weeks of it being created. So posting maps to bulk guides and posting questions about composting. And then we're hosting our first community meetup later this month. My friend Moji and Sasha and I, two other women I've met in Madison, are all just joining forces to host a meetup. And we hope that those will be ongoing, so one every month or so. And then I'm also doing some workshops, speaking to students. So nothing formal like Zero Waste Chicago, no, you know, big Zero Waste Madison. But I almost can't help myself from building Zero Waste community wherever I go. I just want to be plugged in, and I want to help people find what they need. Because the thing about Zero Waste, unlike a lot of things, or unlike a lot of, you know, environmental action, zero waste is so locally specific. You have to really understand the recycling rules, know what compost services are available, you know where you can buy stuff in bulk and donate weird things and recycle light bulbs, and all this stuff is so very locally specific. So I think local organization is just so important for helping people do zero waste with maximum ease. Because although my job is zero waste, most people's jobs aren't zero waste, right? Aren't in zero waste. So, you know, they may be fitting in their zero waste efforts into 5, 3, 10 minutes a day. And I just want to help people find the stuff they need, find the resources they need to access without, you know, taking so much of their time, because it can be hard and it can require a lot of digging.
So for people who are interested in starting their own, not necessarily, you know, a full-blown zero waste community, but at least connecting with other like-minded people in their area, how are you finding people to join the Facebook group? How are you even getting started with connecting with people?
Well, I have a cheat, which is that I run a blog that a lot of people read, which is not something that a lot of people you know, have the benefit of. I think what I always recommend to people are a couple things. So there may be an existing group to plug into. So search everywhere. Search on Facebook. Search the hashtag Zero Waste Your City. So Zero Waste Madison, Zero Waste Chicago are ways that I've met a lot of people. And also, kind of just be open to talking about it with your family and friends, because they may know someone or they may be doing it themselves. I think a lot of people's efforts, as mine were before I started Litterless, are very much private and, you know, happening in the home or in the grocery and not talked about. So you might be surprised at who you find. But just kind of searching around for community, and then, you know, it can be as simple as starting a Facebook group and knowing that other people will search, and it may take a long time for you to get a little crowd in your city, but eventually it probably will happen.
Yeah, and I think one other potential idea for people who are wanting to start is to join one of the larger zero waste groups on Facebook and then post in there and see who's in your area. So I know, like, in our Facebook group, I mean, we're tiny. We don't even have 500 people yet. But I've done a thread of, like, oh, where are you from? And then people are connecting, and, you know, people will be like, oh, I'm in Kansas City. And somebody else is like, I am too. Oh my gosh, let's be friends on Facebook. So I love seeing
that. Yeah. And I think sometimes you almost just only need to meet one other person, right? Like, you can host a meetup between the two of you. And if no one comes, who cares? Because you'll just have coffee with yourselves. And, you know, it sort of gets so much easier as soon as you find, you know, one other person to brainstorm with. For people who don't have Facebook,
that's not a failure.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, but, yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah, like, you just made a new friend, so that's a big success.
For sure, and they probably know about zero waste resources that you might not. I wanted to talk for a sec about what to do if you're not on Facebook, because a lot of people aren't. I didn't used to have Facebook before I got it for this work. So I mentioned, like, just browsing Instagram hashtags. If there's a local zero waste blogger, ask, you know, send them an email to see if they know anybody, if they would be willing to share a group that you create, or if they have thought about this and want to join forces with someone. What else would you suggest that's not Facebook focused?
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't like Facebook, and I only have it to run my Facebook group.
Yep, ditto.
Gosh, yeah, no, that's a good one about connecting with local bloggers. And, you know, if you're having trouble finding, like, say, the hashtag Zero Waste Your City or whatever, I mean, first and foremost, start using it. You, like you said, it might take a long time, but you might be the first one, and other people will search it and find you and reach out to you instead of you reaching out to them. If nobody else exists, you really might be, in some areas, the very first. So just have patience and know it's becoming more and more mainstream. I mean, we just finished up Plastic Free July, and a lot of people at least were aware of the term. They might not, you know, have considered participating in it themselves, but they were aware that it was going on. And all of these big media outlets are starting to cover it too. So I think just 6 months from now, a year from now, it'll be way bigger than it is today.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to get a little plug. If anyone starts something in their area and they want me to promote it, I would love to. I am obsessed with zero waste community. I think it's really powerful. So you can always send me an email, and I would love to share people's organizing work on my platform.
Yes. And speaking of, I know that you have excuse me, an amazing guide on your website of where to shop zero waste and package free and bulk. Is that worldwide, or is that just the United States? I can't remember.
Yes, it's just the United States, and it's statewide. So how that works is every state's broken out. Obviously, some states are lucky to have more resources than others, but I put it together back in 2015, 2016, with just my own research on co-ops. And then since then, I've been updating it with what readers send me. So they all say, add this store or take away this store. And it's just a really great community resource. So I'm glad to have that up there. And I also have the same thing for compost services, because many people, I'm sure, compost in their backyards, but I've always lived in an apartment. I've never had a backyard. And so many cities have these private pickup services or drop-off points. And I just kind of wanted to collate that information as well. So that's on there as well.
Yes, I love it. I haven't used your compost one, but I use your Where to Shop across the United States, like constantly. Every time I go somewhere new, I'm like,
oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up by state to see what's around me, to see where I can go. Yeah, it's been a huge help. So for anybody who's listening who is like, oh, I don't think I have, you know, any sort of options around me to buy anything in bulk, definitely look at litterlist.com and see if there is anything. Or, you know, if you know of a new store that opened up, let her know, of course. And then with my website, I just started building a directory of online zero waste stores. So, you know, if you have a local zero waste store in your area, absolutely 100% support them if you're able to, like, keep that growing in your community. And if you don't have anything like that, that's why I started the directory of online stores, so that you can try to find the closest online store to you to place an order, so that you're reducing the carbon footprint of what you're having shipped to you.
Oh, that's great. I didn't realize yours had a geographical component. I love that.
Yeah. So I tried to get online zero waste stores around the world. And so they're pretty much broken down by continent and then by country kind of thing for around the world. And then of course in the United States, it's broken down by state. And so just helping you find something that's as close to you as possible, so that you're not having something shipped from, like, say, all the way across the country when there was actually an option that's maybe only 200 miles away. So do you have any tips on reducing waste while moving to a different state?
That's a great question. So I moved at the end of June from Chicago to Madison. And the move ended up being a lot more hectic than we planned, just for, you know, random reasons, as moves do. But one thing I worked really hard on was starting very early with donating and recycling this stuff that I knew I didn't want to move with me. So I started a couple months in advance, just making notes of items that I didn't want to take, and taking the time to walk them to the nearest thrift store or bring books to little free libraries, send in electronics for recycling. Sort of all that work takes a really long time. And it wasn't something that I wanted to do particularly. I wanted to be in Chicago and soak up my last few weeks there, but I also didn't want to move this extra stuff. And so it was sort of a balance of taking the time to do that and also, you know, starting early enough that I gave myself a lead time. When I've moved within a city, I've used reusable plastic bins. So they're probably not in every city, but at least in Chicago and in quite a few others, there are companies where you can rent these plastic bins. They bring them to you on a trolley, you fill them, your movers move them, or you move them yourself, and then they pick up the bins. So just a totally reusable option, which is cool. Obviously, that doesn't work for moves between cities or moves between states, because you can't return the bins. But sort of the same thing, you know, as soon as you know you're moving, start saving those boxes, saving boxes from your friends. I don't know. It's hard when you're, one weird thing about that's hard about moving when you're zero waste is all the glass in the kitchen. So most people's food is packaged in plastic and you can just throw it in a box. But when all your food is in jars, you have to wrap every single jar, which can be irritating and take a lot of packing material. So that was kind of a funny one. My partner lived in Madison, you know, before I moved up there. So I just, like, would fill, every time he came to visit for a couple weeks prior to the move, I'd fill his car with all my jars that I didn't want to, like, pack in paper or bubble wrap for movers. But yeah, that was a good incentive to reduce how much is in my pantry, because that was probably my biggest category of stuff to move.
Yeah, definitely. And I would assume, like, with glass, you could probably wrap it in old newspaper or, putting an ad on Craigslist even and asking people for extra bubble wrap and shipping peanuts that they've gotten and aren't using. So that way, you know, it's secondhand plastic at least. So it's not brand new being created and then thrown away for the sole purpose of you moving.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, and friends are great resources too. If you live in the same city as family, maybe your parents still get a daily newspaper, all that stuff.
Yeah, and then I know, like, if you don't have some sort of like rentable plastic bins, or you're moving out of state where you can't use them, there's some grocery stores will let you take their cardboard boxes. Some of them for some reason don't, but I know surprisingly pizza stores, a lot of the time, some of the bigger name chains will let you take their cardboard boxes.
And by that you mean like the boxes that their materials come in, not their pizza boxes. Yeah.
Yes, not pizza boxes. Yeah. Yeah, the bigger cardboard boxes that their food and their ingredient and all of that come in. So, and then I guess my one last question with moving is, I know with furniture, when you're moving, it's oftentimes like quadruple covered in plastic wrap. Do you know of an alternative for furniture?
So we ended up hiring movers to move our furniture, which we initially thought we would move it ourselves. And then we were like, no, our lives are too stressful right now. Let's just pony up and get someone to do it. And I was actually really pleased that they used furniture blankets instead of plastics, which was so great. So, you know, if you were moving yourself, obviously you have a lot more control over what materials get used, or maybe you want to kind of meet the movers at the door and show them your alternative materials and say, this is what you're thinking. I'm sort of hesitant to make someone else's job harder, especially when their job is so hard already. So that's a situation where I probably would just let it go. But if you know, if you're moving yourself, or if you're kind of willing to be more proactive, you could buy thrift store sheets and wash them and use those. You could borrow extra sheets from family members. You could kind of just say like, hey, maybe this piece gets a tiny bit dinged, but it's already a little bit dinged. So, you know, I'm just going to roll with it.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of options out there.
Yeah. I think like an important thing with moving is to let it go a little bit. That's something, a hard lesson I learned this past time when I was trying to be really good and really zero waste. And, you know, in the scramble the day of, some things fall through their cracks. And a moving day is not a normal day. So, of course, you want to do your best. And, of course, in some ways, it's going to be impossible. So kind of like finding that spot where you can find grace with yourself and not drive yourself crazy trying to be, you know, completely perfect, I think is so important.
Yes, definitely remembering that, I mean, perfect is pretty much unattainable. So progress over perfection. You can read the show notes for this episode, including a full transcript and links to the resources mentioned, by visiting ahippieinavan.com/005. Hey guys, Callie here. Thank you so much for listening to the Hippie Haven podcast. Your support means the world to me. If you liked this episode, please subscribe and leave a review in iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It only takes 60 seconds, but it really helps because reviews influence how easily people can find this podcast in search results. We also have an exclusive community over on Facebook. So if you want to connect with me and other like-minded people, just type Hippie Haven in the Facebook search bar and join our group. Thanks again, and stay tuned every Wednesday for the next episode.